This is the April 2 edition of Commodity Week. Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing in Morton, Illinois. And Mike Susilo joins us from globalcomresearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. You may always find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. I think we'll dispense with the list of items that we should discuss because we know what we want to take up, or at least to begin with, and that would be the reports from the United States Department of Agriculture released Monday, both the prospective plantings and the grain stocks numbers. Mike Zuzlo, why don't you take up one or both of those to begin with, and then I'll get an idea from Chip and Matt where they think those are headed in the May USDA WASDE report once it's released for new crop.
You bet. Nice to be with everybody. Happy Easter to everybody if I don't get a chance to tell you all that. The big thing I think to address for me personally, Todd, is the big bean small corn acreage number that I presented at the Outlook meeting back in February. And I still feel fairly comfortable with a 93.5 corn number. I don't feel as comfortable with an 87 million bean number, even though that's what we did, 87.5 in 2022 and 87.3 in 2024. But I do feel as though after looking at the numbers, looking at the survey respondents, seeing the percentage of respondents back from very early March, very late February, that the good till date on that report is especially noteworthy for me. And I feel as though that we've got a situation developing where the soybeans are getting a ton of good press and good news fundamentally. And it's just a question of how much more can they receive to be able to keep going higher. And that, I think, goes back to the crude oil number. But I feel like that the corn number can come down and the bean number can go up versus USDA. The other thing I would note that's very important to the analysis in the next 30 days is the idea that the record low winter wheat acres, along with the drought conditions we're facing, I'm hoping we can see the wheat and the crude oil team up again together and take the whole grain complex higher as we come back from the Easter holiday or shortly thereafter.
Chip Nellinger, your thoughts on the prospective plantings and the grain stocks numbers? And since we don't have them just yet, the prospective plantings report showed 95.33 million acres for corn and 84.7 for soybeans. Chip?
Yeah, I agree with Mike. I think that on the June 30th report, you're going to see that corn number come down on acreage, go up on beans. A little bit of a head scratcher that cotton acreage was up from a year ago. So to Mike's point earlier, I think it was a little bit of an old data situation. Nitrogen fertilizer screaming higher since the start of this Iran conflict. I think that'll bring corn and cotton acres down. I think maybe something a little bit underscored or underlooked at by the market, maybe was the stocks side, a little bit friendly compared to expectations on corn stocks. I think the focus was it's still 900 million bushels bigger than a year ago at this time, but it came in at 100 million bushels or 90 million bushels below the average estimate, kind of shooting in the foot to people that think that demand is overstated. I think on the bean side, though, at 2.1 billion bushels, that was, well over the average trade estimate, just 20 million off of the high estimate. To me, that says that there's no reason at all for the USDA to lower corn demand. There's probably a reason why they could maybe start decreasing bean demand. However, I think they would have done it last month if it weren't for some of the buzz around the potential big purchases from China that have yet to materialize on the bean side.
Matt Bennett, your thoughts on these two reports?
Yeah, I have a hard time disagreeing with these guys on the acreage situation. I felt like from the get-go that if one of these could climb, it would certainly be soybeans. For corn, it's hard for me to believe that, we won't kind of see that scale back. This Chip talked about with anhydrous prices. I mean, you look at urea prices, and there's no doubt that you're kind of in a situation here where It's pretty tough for a grower who was late, or maybe just waiting on spring. Actually, it looked like fertilizer prices were going to give them a little bit of a gift before this conflict started. It's a little bit cheaper than what we were last fall, and then you come in here and you see this happen, and obviously everything screamed higher. So maybe that is only 10 to 20% of acres, and maybe you only lose a portion of that. But just losing a portion of it's going to make a pretty big impact, especially at a time whenever corn demand is so strong. So in the situation, of the May WASDE report, I've got to assume that, we're going to be looking at, for old crop anyway, bean carry should go higher. I agree with what Chip was saying there. I think we came out with a 365. And so, yeah, I can see that even a little higher yet. Exports should probably get reduced. Whenever I look at the new crop balance sheet, using these acreage numbers is probably not going to get too carried away. But I think eventually, as far as beans are concerned, you could be looking at a much more robust stocks number. On the corn side of things, I think it does get interesting, even with a 95.3, what the USDA is going to do. If you looked at the usage, you could actually back this thing into the number of 6.2 on feed and residual, which doesn't make sense to a lot of folks. I don't know what makes sense to me, but the residual category is always that outlier that you're not sure exactly what the USDA is doing with it. So, if they do keep demand anywhere close to 16.4, you're going to be looking at a much tighter situation than what we've been working with, just simply due to the fact that we lost 3.5 million acres of corn.
So, Matt, I'm going to stay with you for a second. And Mike, I think I'd like you to address this question as well. On the day of the report, the University of Illinois Ag Economist Farm Doc team held a webinar in which they were talking about the grain stocks figures in respect to where they were today and this demand usage. And the suggestion was that one of two things had happened, and they dismissed pretty much, I'm quite certain, the idea that acreage was, or that total production for last year was off, and that that was the issue, but suggested that the third quarter, when they look back over time, tends to change things for that grain stocks number. And I'm wondering what you think of those data sets, if you've watched them enough to know second and third quarter. Second tends to be wonky, third quarter a little bit so, but maybe fixing what happened in the third quarter. Do you think that's the case?
I mean, it's certainly, we've seen this type of thing happen before. I know that a lot of folks called me and said, hey, due to usage being where it's at, you could make one or two assumptions. Of course, a lot of people want to make the assumption that production was off. If they're eliminating that, then in my opinion, it's pretty tough for me to step in here and say that demand isn't actually a heck of a lot closer to what the USDA, has said than what some people have doubted, if you will. And so once you get into June, there's no doubt that if this export pace continues where it's at, if ethanol doesn't back off much, which I don't expect it to, I mean, this week wasn't the best week, but at the same time, I've got to assume that your June quarterly stocks numbers are still going to show excellent disappearance. Is it going to equate to the same type of demand USDA was forecasting? Maybe it's not exact, but by all means, it's definitely the best demand we've ever seen. So I expect that June will still show very strong disappearance.
And then, Mike, you can just follow up on your thoughts as it's related to that grain stocks report or the idea that the Farm Doc team is putting forward.
Yeah, I'm with everything that Matt was talking about there, and I would reemphasize the idea that the summer E15 is going to help us quite a bit, even if we would lose some export demand because of the sharp price rally in the crude oil market. I don't see that yet, though, because we're still, other than maybe the upriver Argentina price, we're still the cheapest corn out there in the world from the charts that I look at, Todd. The key, I think, for the grain stocks report as it relates to corn was who's holding those stocks, and the commercials down 2% from last year as far as what they're holding, and the on-farm storage is up 21% from last year. On-farm is 60% of the total. That's a very high number. And so if this demand does stay strong, it would suggest the commercials don't have that coverage in place. They did not buy extra. They're still running a JIT type mindset. And I really question that given the economic environment and the interest rate environment that we're heading into. So it'll be interesting to see if we don't see a little bit more of a CYA type mindset by the end users instead of JIT.
So, Chip Nellinger, I want you to turn your attention to soybeans in particular. One of the things that we talked about during last week's Commodity Week program, but before it was released, was that the RVO could be a buy the rumor, sell the fact event. That was the case. It does not negate, however, the idea or the factual ground truth that going forward, the renewable volume obligations for biomass based fuels like renewable diesel and even FAME or regular soy diesel are going to increase dramatically in the second half of this year and again into 2027. How much of a lift to the marketplace do you suppose that will be in the crush for soybeans?
Yeah, Todd, we've already seen a nice increase in crush, right? We're well over 200 million bushels a month now, and that is due directly to the fact of some of these new plants that have come online, the last 6 to 12 months. I think that it is good news longer term. I do think it would have been a bigger buy the rumor, sell the fact if you didn't have $110 crude oil for the last 2 weeks, or at least north of 100, helping support soy oil. So, got to understand, we rallied really sharply over the last 4 weeks, or I should say 4 months, in soy oil. So it didn't come out any different than expectations. To your point, though, 27, 28, it's going to get really good. Question becomes, like we talked earlier, how much lower do we adjust these exports in the short run due to lack of Chinese business and the big Brazilian bean crop? That's going to be the case, right? Longer term, I think we got good support, good demand. In the short run, though, have we kind of played that out? And is that old news right now? Especially if we happen to see the USDA start pulling back bean demand on the export side and increase in the carryout. Funds have a big long position. So, sometimes when you're talking a year and 2 out, that gets overshadowed by some of the short run movements from the funds. And they're not record, but they are record long in soy oil. They're close to record long in beans. That's getting a little bit burdensome, and this is part of my fear about a bigger break coming in beans here in the short run.
Well, Matt Ben, I want to follow up with you just a bit on the fundamentals here. Of course, Chip suggesting, rightfully so, that the increases in the crush for biomass-based fuels might be offset by a lack of exports for soybeans, in part because of the trade war between the United States and China, but mostly because it would result in a higher internal price, quite likely, for soybeans. And then, of course, there's the other flip side of that one, which is we're already running close to capacity in the United States. And I don't know how quickly more capacity can be put into place or how much we have left on capacity, but we'll run at 100% or better, I would think, in the second half of the year. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt we are at capacity. I don't think that there's a whole lot of room for upward movement. You look at these monthly crush rates, and as Chip suggested, a couple hundred million. I mean, you look at every month we've posted a new record for the last several months. And bottom line is, you're going to have a heck of a time being able to crush more beans when we don't have the facilities to do so. So the problem I see, is that I don't see any upward revision for crush to speak of. But at the same time, you should be able to revise this export number lower. I don't see us exporting a whole lot of beans in the current situation that we're in. So I know there's a lot of excitement about what soybean demand is going to look like on down the road, crush demand, obviously, with the RVO. And that's certainly going to be a feather in our cap moving forward. But at the same time, it's pretty tough to distance ourselves from a 180 million metric ton, crop out of Brazil, first of all. And obviously, it looks like South American production in total is going to be robust. So, I've got to think we're going to really struggle to be competitive on the export front. And overall, I think that you're going to look at a world balance sheet that's going to be more than adequate. So, I'm with Chip. I do think that there's the potential here that unless we get some massive help, I mean, that's the outlier that Mike spoke about before. If this situation propels crude oil to go sharply higher, and if we see the situation with wheat continue on an upward move, it can certainly support us. But with all things not changing and crude oil staying maybe back in the range previous to the war, if you would get back to that level due to things cooling down, I would be very concerned about bean price trajectory.
Now, this was where I was headed with you, Mike, to begin with. So let's do follow up on that. You can bring wheat into the conversation. I would think understanding both the issues that are appearing in the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the United States and what global supplies look like will be important. And then comparing how the Ukraine-Russia drop might be imposed within the in prices after the initial shock imposed within the trade at this point in time for the Middle East war. How do you see a couple of those things going? Let's start with the wheat and then we'll turn to the war.
Yeah, my mindset is pretty simple at this point, Todd, is we need to see the market push premium back into the wheat complex on tightening supplies. This is still a negative supply shock, a demand rationing type event that we've seen, but never to this extent. And what I mean by that is the International Energy Agency said earlier this week that if you combine the 73, 74 oil crisis in the Middle East with the 79, 80 crisis in the Middle East, that we're still doing more damage in terms of lost production per day from the Strait of Hormuz being shut down. We don't even know how much production per day we're really going to lose, depending on how much more conflict arises. And President Trump talking about going after energy facilities specifically out of Iran. We're very early into this. And so I think the premium in the market and commodities is just not there, especially the ag commodities, maybe minus the soybean oil. One thing that I think is really apparent to me after the president spoke this week on Wednesday night was the market on Thursday realized just how far apart the key players still are in opening up the Strait of Hormuz. And essentially, the market understands now we're not going to get the U.S. out of that conflict until the Strait opens up, and especially the way the U.S. wants it to open up. People are talking in Asia already about seeing 30 to 80% increases in prices, whether it's liquid propane gas coming out of Saudi Arabia. The Asian oil price was just raised by Saudi Aramco by 20 to 40% starting this month. There's a pretty large pork producer in Japan has been approached that this is coming from Nikkei is saying that they're going to get a 20 to 30% increase in their costs because of fuel. As far as delivering feed to that pork producer, we are at a stage, I think, where we really need to start thinking about where the price should be in corn and wheat if this continues on. And I've told clients that every 30 days this goes on, I'll raise the floor on my crude oil price, my support level, every $15 every 30 days. So we're at $80 for support now. On April 15th, we'll be at $95 support, and so on and so forth. So for the wheat market and the fact that we're looking at a drought situation of 14% of the winter wheat not in drought, that's the lowest that I've seen. It's going all the way back to 2021. And if you look at D3, D4 drought, you're talking about 27% back in 2023. This past week, we came in at 9%. And so I think we're really getting to a point where the winter wheat crop and the Western Corn Belt is at a situation where it could be dire in 30 to 45 days. And I think the market honestly is walking past the graveyard right now.
Chip Nellinger, given all of that, I'm wondering as the price of crude oil rises and if it continues at a $15 a month pace, As long as the Strait of Hormuz is not opened, and that appears not to be on the president's list of things to do at the moment, when does demand destruction set in for grains and oil seeds based off the high price of crude, meaning that you can't find the LNG, you can't find the energies, and eventually it slows down the world economy?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of questions there, but I do fear, even if this conflict war were to have a quick resolution, which it doesn't look like, it's going to, if you think of everything, every truck, every train, every ocean going vessel that is moved by diesel fuel, and just the sheer amount that it's going to increase the cost across the world, let alone even having access to it, right? We're a little bit lucky here because we're going to have access to it, but some areas of the world may not even have access to it. To your point, Todd, it's going to take several months to a year to sift through the economy. And the higher the crude oil goes and the longer it stays at this high level, north of 100, I think the worse it becomes on the world economy. And there's no question we could enter into a fairly deep and hard recession. Does that affect grain? You know, I don't know. I think that is the question, right? Because there's plenty of areas that may not have access to the fertilizer and nitrogen products that they need. So does that curtail production enough to offset demand destruction? I think it just leads to the potential for massive volatility. I think producers have to have even more attention than they ever had, you know, to their risk management plan. But I think that's a question, Todd, that remains to be answered. I'll be open to what the other guys think on this, because it's really going through my head. I don't see any way we can avoid a world recession due to these energy costs. But I don't know if that immediately means, you know, we curtail demand on the grains immediately. It might at the end result, but it could be the opposite if we face a lack of fertilizer and nitrogen availability to some of these other countries.
We'll let Matt and Mike answer that question. Matt, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think one of the things that Chip covered this really well, one of the things that comes to mind for me, you know, as this continues, if it continues into, you know, for instance, the second half of the year, even right now, I think that the bigger question mark for me on production is going to be the upcoming year. I mean, you've got to look at fertilizer prices, for instance, you know, what the availability is going to be, what the cost is going to look like. Clearly, if you take crude oil significantly higher, history would suggest, especially since the ethanol phase began, you know, that you should take corn prices a fair amount higher as well, which would maybe alleviate some of the stress of what, you know, $1,000 or $1,200 anhydrous looks like. And it could be higher than that yet. That's the scary thing. And so I think moving forward, there's no doubt that you could see, for instance, 2026 could be a good year, you know, for those growers that's got all of their input costs locked in. I mean, we could see, even if fundamentals don't change at all or would tilt in the bearish aspect, there's no doubt you could still see the corn price rally just simply due to what we're seeing in energy prices. The problem is going to be moving into 27. You know, what will production look like around the world if it's if the availability of fertilizer and fuel is restricted and price is prohibitive for the grower to be able to make money? And so I think it could create quite a major issue, you know, for growers everywhere. And so with that being the case, I'm with Chip. I mean, you've got to have some sort of a plan in place, in my opinion, for this year. You know, have some worst case scenarios locked in, but keep yourself quite flexible. I mean, it's something that we talked about, you know, back at the beef house. I mean, I want to stay very flexible and on our toes, because there's no doubt that this thing can all change very rapidly. So 27 is a bigger concern for me than 26, but I think this is all the way that this is all going to play out is it's going to create massive volatility that, you know, quite frankly, for three straight years we haven't had. So volatility does create opportunity, and that's one thing that I definitely want to point out.
And Mike, your thoughts on the volatility demand destruction and what producers should do.
Yeah, I think it starts in Asia and Europe, and that points me directly to the EU price of wheat and the US price of wheat, and they're getting very close to being the same price at about 6 1/4 a bushel. And I think this is where we need to see the EU price react more positively, like it did with the Russian incursion and war and invasion into Ukraine in 2022. So that's very top of my list, as is looking at the US natural gas versus the EU natural gas. I think wheat and natural gas are going to be two key leading indicators as to the chicken and the egg, is what you're asking, is have we rationed demand enough? Well, no, not if we don't even know how much supply is going to be offline for how long. I mean, that's really the heart and soul of the question that you're asking. And what Chip was talking about a minute ago sounded just like 2007, 2008, this steep rise led by crude, the grains follow, and then a financial crisis occurs, and we go into the soup until the 2012 drought. I think that's a model that we want to keep in mind. But it's really clear to me, based upon this research that continues to keep streaming out from Asia, especially, who takes on these imports from the Strait of Hormuz more than anybody else out there, Todd, that we have airlines that will be canceling flights in April. We have a lot coming down the pike as far as gas stations that will run out of fuel and diesel, like Chip was talking about. We have propane gas that is going to be an issue in countries like India, it looks like. I think the month of April is going to be an eye-opener. And so that's where I could see doing a lot of hedging and a lot of business, like Matt's talking about, just to get floors underneath me, just like I did in beans before this acreage report. I feel great having a 1050 floor in beans right now, most of it in paper positions. I think the same thing in wheat and corn, maybe in the next 30 days.
And I'll wrap up by allowing Chip and Matt to give their thoughts on where producers should have themselves positioned, and we'll close the program out. Chip, your thought?
Yeah, Todd, we've been taking advantage of essentially sold out of beans from an old crop perspective. Maybe have a few old crop bushels of corn laying around. I've recommended 20-25% priced in new crop corn, some additional puts above and beyond that, about the same in beans, maybe a little more, even more aggressive on new crop beans, up to a third priced, another third with some puts so that we have some upside potential on this corn. If we see a break into planting time frame down into the low 460s versus December, we're looking to buy some calls on some of the sales that we made from higher levels. To Matt's point earlier, expect a lot of volatility. It's going to lead to opportunity, but it's not going to be a fun ride. It hasn't been yet, and it's probably going to get worse before it gets better.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much in the same boat on old crop as what Chip was talking. Gambling bushels only is pretty much what the recommendation would be. You know, whether someone chooses to take that or not, it's up to them. But as far as new crop's concerned, we've been fairly aggressive. We've got either hedging or, you know, a floor in place on over half of our soybean crop. As far as corn goes, it's pushing 50%. You know, we did take advantage of some of these price levels whenever we got into the 485 to 495 range. And I'm like Chip, I think a person wants to have some of those sales covered. We did buy, you know, a fair amount of actually August short dated $5 calls previous to this whole skirmish getting going. We had no idea this was going to happen. We just felt like they would be good ownership for someone who wanted to make a sale. And so in my opinion, I want to keep hedges in place and then keep those hedges covered, at least on a decent portion of them, especially the more aggressive a grower gets in their sales programs.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Mike Zuzula at globalcomresearch.com, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, and Matt Bennett of agmarket.net. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.